This is Brad Crandall, your host for Monitor 67, the best seat in the house for a look at the weekend world. Just ahead, we'll hear an interview with E.R. Braithwaite, Guyana's head of mission at the United Nations and author of a new book called Choice of Straws. First, here's Charlie Colello with When I Tell You I Love You. Human brutality, man's inhumanity to man, is probably a matter of greater concern in the world today than ever before. One man who has explored this problem in great depth is E.R. Braithwaite, now head of the mission to the United Nations from the emerging nation of Guyana. Mr. Braithwaite is an unusual man, a graduate of New York and Cambridge universities, holder of a master's degree in physics. He's been an RAF fighter pilot, a teacher, a lecturer, and a children's officer for the London Welfare Department. Now he's also an author of a book called Choice of Straws, which deals with an incident of brutality and racial misunderstanding.
This is Charlie Holmes for Monitor. Mr. Braithwaite, a couple of boys, white boys, shall we say, to go out and attack an individual Negro is a kind of a sport. Rough him up and leave him. And the reverse may be true.
Quite so.
Why is this brutality game being played with
these? Well, this is not a new thing. If you look back historically, the same thing has happened in the United States, in Britain, in France. Mm-hmm. I was in Australia and New Zealand quite recently, and I went out to visit the island just off the coast of Australia, what's it called, Tasmania, mm-hmm. and discovered that when this island was first settled, a favorite sport of the settlers was to go out what they call blackbirding. Mm-hmm. That is, shooting Aborigines. This was sport, you see. And we have not removed so far away from that kind of attitude, in spite of the fact that we believe ourselves to be highly civilized. And the boys who were addicted to this kind of behavior were not inhuman creatures.
It was a game more than it was...
Exactly. You see, they did not think in terms that they were hurting these people. They were having fun, and the idea that these people were being hurt did not, you know, impinge too heavily upon them.
Well, what kind of background do they come from that allows them to develop this
kind of thing?
Or what happens?
Brutality does not particularly emanate from any special background. Examine any historical situation, you might see that some of the people you consider to be the nicest people are capable of the most heinous crimes. It's not peculiar to any background at all.
I think the other side of the coin is quite interesting in that I think we find some of these very same young people writing excellent, sensitive poetry. I'm talking about teenagers.
Absolutely. But this is what the human animal is, and this is what makes him so exciting, that out of the same, you know, blood and bones and nerves, you can get evil and you can get the greatest good. Now, what I have written must not lead you to believe that all young people are like this.
No.
Because, consider Britain itself. Young people are discovering now how to live together. And when I say young people, I mean young people of different racial origins. And they've got to do this of themselves. The background of Britain does not provide them any guidelines at all. Because in spite of its high vaunted level of tolerance, the British at home have had no experience of living with colored peoples in terms of equality.
Mm-hmm.
They have given the impression that they have been able to do this outside of Britain. But when they have been tested at home in terms of tolerance, in terms of equality, at all levels, the whole thing has broken down. So the young people have got to learn this for themselves.
It's my understanding that equality and freedom are two different things, and that the Negro really desires freedom more than equality. Would you talk about
that? Well, this is how I see it. Equality is a limiting concept, terribly limiting, because if I look at you and I want to be equal with you, it means that my horizons are conditioned by your size and your abilities.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I think in terms of freedom, it means that I am like the bird, you know, I can go as far as my wings can take me. And you are just another person. I want to look towards infinity, not to you. Because as long as you're a mere human being, well then, who are you that I should see you as the size of my interests and my ambitious endeavors?
Mm-hmm.
I prefer, freedom. Because freedom has no limits. The very word itself connotes immensity.
I believe you say in your book, Choice of Straws, that you want the right to dislike whomever you want to.
But this is how I want to be free. Look, I want to be even free to fail, you know?
Right.
This is how I see it. I want to be free to succeed, but equally I want to be free to fail. I want to be free to love you, but I want to be free not to love you.
Let's get back to the teenagers and young people again. We can't communicate with the young people today, their parents and older people. Why?
But I think this is a mistake. If we want to, we can communicate with anyone. Because we have been so accustomed that the young people should be told and not listened to, that we set up for ourselves, without even bothering to give it thought, this limitation of communication. I think the moment we are prepared to listen to someone, we already set the scene for him to listen to us. You see, communication is a two-way process. And any time we can't communicate with someone, examine it closely, it is because we are not letting him communicate with us.
We are not listening.
We're not listening, you see. I think together with a willingness to listen, we must be patient. You know, we must not decide for ourselves that people must communicate with us in certain terms only. If we want to communicate, then we must open to communication as it is expressed.
Thank you very much, Mr. Braithwaite, for a most interesting conversation, and we invite you to visit Monitor again.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Mr. E.R. Braithwaite, head of Guyana's mission to the United Nations and author of a new book titled Choice of Straws. This is Charlie Holmes for Monitor.
To dream the impossible dream, to fight the unbeatable foe, to bear unbearable sorrow, to run where the brave dare not go, to right the unrightable wrong, to love pure and chaste from afar, to try when your arms are too weary, to dream the impossible dream, to fight the unbeatable foe, to bear with unbearable sorrow, to run where the brave dare not go, to run where the brave dare not go, though the goal be forever too high. Oh,
Steve Lawrence on monitor at 20 minutes after the hour. Ahead, more music and a sports feature by Joe Garagiola, who takes a look at the new challenger for the middleweight boxing title of the world. So keep tuned. You're on the monitor, Beacon.
WNBC New York, the big voice of Big Town USA, is the sound of entertainment.
This is Brad Crandall with Monitor 67, starting off this time with Don Costa and Trini's Tune. Monitor Sports with Joe Garagiola, brought to you by Vigoro, the goof-proof lawn food.
We're going to find out what kind of a fighter he is. When it comes to training for a fight, we already know he's something else. And I'll be back to talk about that after this from Vigoro.
When the green in your grass is gone, and you got to make it shape up, make it wake up with the bold green vigor of Vigoro.
You bet. And the reason is simple. They've been at it longer and hold more patents for plant feeding breakthroughs than any other outfit in the country, bar none. And when they make a Vigoro product for any lawn or garden use, it's tailor-made for the area it's sold in. That's the secret of the bold green vigor of Vigoro.
It's a lot greener than green. A hefty kind of bold green. The bold green vigor of Vigoro. The bold green vigor of Vigoro.
Vigoro, the goof-proof, tailor-made lawn foods. You sure ought to try them.
Tomorrow night in Madison Square Garden, Emil Griffith defends his world middleweight championship against Nino Benvenuti of Italy. How good a fighter Nino is, we'll know more about tomorrow night. But when it comes to training for a fight, Signor Benvenuti has already proved that he's different. When a fighter goes into training, particularly for a championship fight, one thing that's watched very carefully is his diet. Usually that consists of a lot of red meat and green vegetables. The liquids are usually fruit juices, milk, and water. That's what's appeared on boxers' training tables for years. Nino does it a little differently. For example, he likes what Italians call pasta. Americans call it macaroni or spaghetti. Now, if your name is Nino Benvenuti, it's not really such a big upset that you like pasta. But no matter what your name is, it's not considered a breakfast food. Nino eats it for breakfast. He also eats it for lunch and for supper. That's not only a problem, it also creates a problem. When an Italian eats pasta, he doesn't wash it down with orange juice or milk. That's like putting chocolate syrup on a pizza. The thing to drink with pasta is red wine. And that's what Nino does. I've seen a lot of people do that, but none of them were getting ready to fight for the middleweight championship of the world. Even if you've never been at a boxer's training camp, you've seen movies or newsreels about them. You've seen fighters work out with the light bag and make it sound like they were drummers in a rock and roll band. With Nino, it doesn't sound that way, and the reason is simple. Most punching bags are filled with air. Nino's is filled with sand. Then there's the matter of road work. What could be simpler than a boxer doing his road work? He just gets up early in the morning, jogs 5 or 6 miles, and comes back. Not Nino. He breaks it up by making believe that he's Tarzan and swinging from limb to limb in the trees. Fight promoters must get a big kick out of watching him do that. One thing that Benvenuti does have in common with American fighters is the fact that he's a big favorite in his old neighborhood. Unfortunately, the old neighborhood is in Trieste, Italy. You can't get from Trieste to Madison Square Garden on the subway. But to Nino Benvenuti's fans, that doesn't mean a thing. About 400 of them are coming from Italy for the fight, and they're being led by the movie star Marcello Mastroianni, who's stopping production on a movie just to see Nino fight. There's one other thing about his training that I ought to mention. His trainer stands 20 feet away from him and throws tennis balls at Nino's face just as hard as he can. Nino either ducks them or blocks them with his gloves. If he does it right, which he seems to, it can make him a great defensive fighter. If he does it wrong, though, it could make him very ugly. Tomorrow night, we'll find out if pasta and vino is also the breakfast of champions. This is Joe Garagiola for Monitor Sports.
You know, if pasta and vino do turn out to be the breakfast of champions, maybe you ought to change his name to Nino Armstrong, the all-Sicilian boy. Joe Garagiola is heard every weekend on Monitor. Weekdays on NBC Radio. Believer, the Golden Gate Strings. This is Brad Crandall, your host for Monitor 67. The best way to follow whatever's going on in the weekend world, wherever you are or wherever you go in the USA. In Hattiesburg, Mississippi, we're heard on station WFOR. Now, a word from our NBC stations all around the nation, and then we'll be back.
This is Monitor with the bright new sounds of 67 on the NBC Radio Network. It's 44 degrees and it's cloudy in Big Town. WNBC, New York, the big voice of Big Town, USA. Spring sneezes and bronchial barks spread germs. A cold in itself may not be very serious, but it could develop into something unpleasant in terms of time lost, expense, and general misery. Always cover a cough or sneeze with a handkerchief or tissue. For more information, write Tuberculosis Association or Cough, Box 37, New York, New York.
Earlier this week, thieves broke into a warehouse in the borough of the Bronx, New York City, and stole 4.5 tons of garlic. 4.5 tons of garlic. Now, that's what I call a strong thief. Anyhow, here's music. All sung by James Darren, and then the Sunset Strings with I'll Set My Love to Music.
Could never capture all the loveliness of you. All much to hold you and enfold you.
This is Monitor 67. I'm Brad Crandall. In just 2 minutes, a late report on the American Quaker ship Phoenix, which returned to Hong Kong earlier this week after delivering medical supplies to North Vietnam. First, let's hear some Monitor music. Here's Dean Martin. Lay some happiness on me.
Later, tell your troubles goodbye.
Lay some
kiss me too. A good, good love makes a bad, bad fighter, and I'm not digging on you.
Take some happiness on me, so the brighter side you'll see. No more loneliness to me. Lay some happiness on me. Lay some happiness on me, so the brighter side you'll see. No more loneliness to me. Lay some happiness on me.
Recently, a group of Americans sailed their own ship to North Vietnam to deliver medical supplies to an enemy of the United States, and the controversy over this action still rages. Early this week, the ship came back to Hong Kong, and NBC News correspondent Wells Hangen was on hand to cover the story.
The American Quaker Catch Phoenix returned to Hong Kong last Monday after a controversial and well-publicized mission of mercy to North Vietnam. The seven men and one woman aboard the little vessel delivered $10,000 worth of medical supplies for North Vietnamese victims of American bombing raids. For 8 days, they were given the customary red carpet treatment by North Vietnamese officials. They were taken on guided tours of bombed villages, to hospitals where the injured are being treated, and to country schools where children evacuated from Hanoi and Haiphong are now enrolled. Soon after the Phoenix nosed her way into the Hong Kong yacht basin, one day ahead of Typhoon Violet, Dr. Earl Reynolds, the leader of the expedition, held a news conference on board. Later, I interviewed Dr. Reynolds on the after deck of the Phoenix.
Hey, Dr. Reynolds, how were you received when you came to North Vietnam?
We were received with great friendliness and with genuine warmth. The people seemed to be expecting us and most happy to see us.
How about Haiphong Harbor? Is that operating at high speed now?
Haiphong Harbor, I've been in a lot of harbors. Haiphong Harbor is operating. They have a regular commercial relationships, agents. They got diesel oil for us and everything through a broker, just as you would get it here in Hong Kong. In fact, easier than it got in Hong Kong, because one super patriotic American company refused to sell me diesel oil here.
How about the roads? Are they blocked by the bombing?
It seemed to me to have a very efficient repair system and standby crews everywhere that are ready to repair immediately. And on the trip to Hanoi, we passed over a bridge, which I was told that this bridge was disarticulated at the end of the night's traffic and therefore was open water in the daytime and rearticulated like a tinker toy in the early part of the evening, and that's why the traffic couldn't begin till 10 or 11 o'clock, because the bridge wasn't ready yet.
What about North Vietnam's readiness for peace talks? Did you sense any inclination on their part to end the war?
It's obvious that North Vietnam wants peace. Nobody wants these planes dropping bombs on them, and it was a horrible feeling to be not under the bombs, but within 5 miles of the bombs when they were dropping, and to see and hear and sense and have the concussion of these bombs. For the first time, I really knew what it meant to be under a bomb, and it was a very unpleasant feeling.
What about the stores, the shops? Are they open? Do they have goods on the shelves?
They mostly have been decentralized now. The main department store in downtown Hanoi, for instance, seems to have had everything moved out of it except a few knickknacks and souvenirs and so forth. And the small shops and the shops in Hanoi are often clustered the way they are in Japan in craftsman type of areas, shoemakers and cabinet makers and carpenters and so forth. These were all been disseminated out into the field.
Dr. Reynolds, was there any interference with your trip by the American Navy or Air Force?
No physical interference. We were on our way in, about 100 miles out. We were circled by several different types of planes. And finally, a helicopter came and flew around us a number of times at very low altitude with men taking pictures. On the way out, there was a similar treatment. Other than that, they didn't stop us or communicate with us.
The Odyssey of the Phoenix was predictable in everything except the weather it met en route. The American government cautioned the Quaker group against going on pain of being prosecuted for trading with the enemy. The Phoenix sailed anyway. American ships and planes watched it enter Haiphong Harbor. North Vietnamese officials told the visitors what they were already prepared to believe, that is, that America is entirely at fault in Vietnam. And finally, the Quakers emerged from their great adventure convinced they had acquired all the answers to a complex situation. This is Wells Hang in NBC News, Hong Kong.
Petula Clark, this is my song. You're attuned to monitor at 16 minutes before the hour, and just ahead, we'll be hearing Ed Ames and Sportive Speed with Ted Webb, so don't move that dial. You're on the monitor, Beacon. Brad Crandall back with more of Monitor 67, noting that today, April 16th, is the beginning of National Library Week. As a gesture of cooperation, we now bring you this word from your friendly neighborhood librarian. Shh. Now, Ed Ames with Monitor Music. My cup runneth over.
Sometimes in the morning, when shadows are deep, I lie here beside you, just watching you sleep. And sometimes I whisper what I'm thinking of. My cup runneth over with love. Sometimes in the evening, when you do not see, I study the small things you do constantly. I memorize moments that I'm fondest of. My cup runneth over with runneth over with love.
now, at the Monitor Sports Desk, here's Mel Allen.
Monitor presents Sport of Speed. It's time for your weekend checkpoint for Ted Webb's news, views, and results from the world of auto racing. Brought to you by the many service stations from coast to coast that carry a brand of Pennsylvania motor oil. Ted will be along in just a moment. Right now, I want to tell you something of real interest to all sports car fans. For the fourth straight year, the refiners of Pennsylvania Motor Oils are making rally kits available for sports car clubs. Each kit contains six big, highly visible red and black checkpoint signs, plus two sheets of red and black gummed windshield stickers numbered 1 through 100. And something new has been added this year. Along with the checkpoint signs and windshield stickers, you get a pad of 120 sanctioned checkpoint rally scoring slips. The whole package is yours for just a buck. That's right, just a dollar for the complete rally kit. To get a kit for your club, mail your dollar to Checkpoint, Box 96, Oil City, Pennsylvania. Oh, and by the way, here's a tip. On your next rally, try one of the many fine brands of Pennsylvania motor oil. You may not win, but I'll tell you this, you'll sure finish with a sweeter running engine. Now let's repeat that address for your rally kits. For the complete package of checkpoint signs, windshield stickers, and scoring slips, send $1 to Checkpoint, Box 96, Oil City, Pennsylvania. We ran out last year, so send for yours today. And now, here's Ted.
Thank you, Mel. The United States Auto Club Sprint Car Division took to the dirt surface of the half-mile Eldora Speedway at Rossburg, Ohio this afternoon, and it was the fortune of a former IMCA contender to top the best efforts of the USACers. Raleigh Beal of Toledo, Ohio won the feature event, followed by Bob Wente from St. Louis. Third place was taken by Larry Dixon of Marietta, Ohio, one of the newer crop of drivers destined, in my opinion, to attain considerable heights in his chosen occupation. In the Southland today, the Gwynne Staley Memorial Race for the Grand National Division of NASCAR went for 250 miles over the North Wilkesboro track in North Carolina. The first three late model stockers to finish were Fords, with Darrell Derringer of Charlotte first, followed by Cale Yarborough, also from the Queen City, taking second, and Dick Hutchison of Keokuk, Iowa, settling for third. Jim Pascal of High Point, North Carolina, then broke the continuity, finishing fourth in a Plymouth. He, in turn, was followed across the line by Paul Lewis of Johnson City, Tennessee, driving a Dodge. The third in the series of the Trans-American Championship races for production sedans was held this afternoon over the Green Valley Raceway at Smithfield, Texas, a 1.6-mile road course located between Dallas and Fort Worth. 30 cars got underway, and some 300 miles later, Dan Gurney of Costa Mesa, California, brought his Mercury Cougar in for the win. He had company from among his own team, however, as in for runner-up position came Parnelli Jones from Torrance, California. Then came variety. Dr. Dick Thompson of Washington, D.C. took third in a Mustang. Mark Donahue from Stony Brook, New York was fourth in a Camaro, while Jerry Titus from Sherman Oaks, California, who was the winner of the last such race at Sebring, Florida 2 weeks ago, finished today in fifth spot, also in Mustang. The popularity of this division within SCCA activity promises to be quick to take hold. The first race for the championship trail drivers in the East is always the Trenton, New Jersey 150, which will go next Sunday afternoon. This is always something of a shakedown before all racing in this division is limited to activity at Indianapolis, starting with the 29th of April. Rookies and veterans will converge on Trenton for this first race next Sunday afternoon, and a top-flight entry list is already on hand. And so that the drivers who double in driving the sprint car division will have no dull time on their trip east, a sprint car has been arranged for them on the Saturday evening before the Trenton event to be held on the Reading, Pennsylvania half-mile just as a warm-up. Next weekend, for the NASCAR contingent, there'll be big doings at Martinsville, Virginia, with the running of the 12th annual Virginia 500. Among the entrants will be Cale Yarborough, in the Woods Brothers 67 Fairlane. Admittedly, the Woods Brothers are the top mechanics, and they have no peers when it comes to functioning as a pit crew. All they ask for next Sunday is the chance to win their first Grand National at the track almost next door to their home in Stuart, Virginia, which is Martinsville. This is Ted Webb.
Sport. Sport of Speed with Ted Webb is brought to you twice each weekend by the many famous brands of Pennsylvania Motor Oil. For the lasting good of your engine, insist on a Pennsylvania Motor Oil. This is Mel Allen for Monitor Sports.
Mary had a little lamb. One and one make two. Candles on a birthday cake. Blow them out and your wish comes true. Does he love me? Does he not? Tell me, Daisy, do. Oh, to be a child again. Oaks from acorns grew. One and one made two. I believe. I remember when every day began, strawberry jam and laughter, and every story ended with happily ever after. I remember feeling that I'd be safe if I didn't step on a crack. The days when the sun was up ahead and the wind was at my back. Does he love me? Does he not? Tell me, Daisy, do. Oh, to be a child.
Pozo Seco Singers, I believed it all. Did you know that this is Charlie Chaplin's birthday? Charles Spencer Chaplin was born in England on the 16th of April, 1889, and went on to become a comedian, author, director, and producer of movies of his own creation. And if you've never seen a Charlie Chaplin movie, you're younger than I am, but I'm luckier than you are. Kempfert, hold me. This is Monitor 67. I'm your host, Brad Crandall, reminding you to take advantage of this musical invitation.
Be tuned. The latest news now is on the air. Keep tuned for sports and views now from everywhere. From NBC.
forest fire moves fast. It consumes thousands of trees and destroys wildlife. It burns acres of watershed and leaves the land wide open for floods. It can start disaster that continues for months. And all it takes is one careless match. So when you're in the forest, keep a check on fire. Hold matches until they're cold. Drown your campfire and crush all smokes dead out. Remember, carelessness is catching, and please remember, only you can prevent forest fires.
For a provocative and stimulating evening, join Long John Neville Mondays through Saturdays at midnight on WNBC, the big voice of Big Town USA. Long John, a man with matters on his mind, is of a mind to make them matter by bringing you interesting people with something to say and no fear of saying it. Fair warning, though, once you've let Long John put you in touch with Big Town, you'll find yourself staying up all night, waiting to hear what's next on the Long John Neville Show. No stock answers in Brad Crandall's Store of Knowledge, weeknights at 9 on the Big Voice of Big Town USA, WNBC, New York.